This week on Decentralize, South by Southwest and Blockchain University, global mainstreaming of Bitcoin payments, the intriguing Bitcoin startup 21. Then we talk to Jason King, founder of Sean's Outpost.
I'm Tony Sakic.
I'm James Walpole.
And I'm Eric Martindale.
And this is Decentralize.
Fresh off the cuff this week with South by Southwest. Tony, I think you were spending some time down there. What'd you think?
Yeah, actually, it was my first time that I've ever been at South by. It's an interesting vibe, and you know, it really does take over the entire city of Austin. I'm fairly certain everyone that lives in Austin hates it, which I can understand. I probably would too. I actually was at a part of an event called Startup Debut for Augur, so got to meet some really cool, interesting new startups. The coolest being that Factum. I actually got to meet a bunch of people from Factum, and I'm actually I need to even learn more about what they're doing. But I actually spoke with some former colleagues of mine at BitPay that were very excited about Factum too, and that was really interesting. And we may have someone from the show on the show in the future. But overall, it's a really cool event. We weren't a part necessarily of the official South by Southwest interactive part because that is very pricey on every end. What we chose to do is be a part of a smaller event, which we're happy with because we pay, you know, as a company, that was really where we're at right now is we don't want to be on that main stage, you know, with tons of people that, you know, we don't necessarily need to speak with. We really want to be with our targeted core audience right now. And for the company, I'm happy. As for personally, unfortunately, I didn't get to do as many of the events as I wanted. I missed the Run the Jewels set, which apparently was pretty crazy because someone jumped on stage and attacked the band. It was at one of the Spotify houses. And you know, there's all kinds of parties happening all around the city, and some are easier to get into than others. But, you know, it's very much a city where good luck getting an Uber during that week. And, you know, it really takes over the entire thing. And it's interesting because it was traditionally all music. And, you know, the tech scene really took over a big space in that. So, overall, great time. I recommend everyone go at least once. I hope next year that I'm there longer, and I have a feeling I will be. We kind of threw everything together at the last minute because of one of our former sponsorships that we had before this failed. So overall, I would give it a thumbs up. I recommend everyone to go at least once. If the music's your thing, I would make sure to just come in during the music week, though, or vice versa for interactive.
Yeah, so South by Southwest is three full weeks, right? It's they do the music, they do film, and they do interactive. I've only ever been for the interactive section. It's always really interesting. It seems like interactive and Austin in general is pretty agreeable to new technology, and I find it pretty interesting how quickly they adopt things. But if you remember, you know, I don't even know how long ago it was, but several startups have launched there. The one that really stands out to me is Foursquare. They sort of went around and canvassed, you know, Austin and the local businesses and got everybody set up with like Foursquare specials and deals so that when all of these tech-minded people kind of descended upon the city of Austin, everything was just kind of there. And, you know, who wouldn't want, you know, a free beer or two or three, you know, if you use this Foursquare app? And they saw this really successful. So, Tony, it strikes me, you know, Bitcoin is sort of like this decentralized thing. There's no company that controls it. So who would step up and do it? Since I wasn't there this year, I'm curious. I know Austin has historically been a very pro-Bitcoin city. But did you see anyone, you know, with Bitcoin stickers in their windows? Did you see anybody using Bitcoin? Just like ignoring the South by Southwest crowd itself, like what about the local crowd?
Not really. I didn't really see anyone that was, you know, accepting it. But in the same token, you know, I always like to say I have a limited experience, so I don't necessarily take, you know, my word as gospel on there, but I didn't notice anything. And, you know, if I notice a place accepts Bitcoin, I'm going to obviously pay with Bitcoin just because I like to illustrate that point that I care and that I, you know, people, you do use this because, you know, sometimes, you know, I think in San Francisco is probably the most used market in America, and Austin probably is in the top five. At the event we were at, there were multiple Bitcoin startups. So, you know, as far as that goes, you know, obviously there were people there talking about it, but in the general, you know, Austin area, I didn't hear or see anything specific to Bitcoin. But also, I did not go out of my way to look. I was only there for 3 days. That's the bummer of this is I was really excited to talk about all the awesome things at South by, and really it was all work, 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 work. And I didn't get very, very much, just exploring the city, seeing what's happening and seeing cool things that are happening around there. But what I actually did hear about, and as someone mentioned to me at the event, was Blockchain University. And Eric, I know you have some involvement with that, so I wanted you to go on a little bit about that. And I did learn a little bit there, but I'd rather hear the rest from you.
Sure. Down there in Austin, I would have loved to open up the Airbits wallet and see what was around, because I know out in San Francisco, which is where the Blockchain University was held, Airbits directory is probably one of the best ways of figuring out where I can spend Bitcoin. So all up and down the valley, I kind of pop it open and just take a look and see if I'm hungry, is there a place I can go to spend Bitcoin? If so, I'll send my business there. But, so Blockchain University, was pretty awesome. It was down in Mountain View, south side of the bay. And it was put on by, one of the Chinese incubators down there, and a couple of other interested parties. BitPay had a part in it, and a couple other people had some part in it. And it's basically all of the engineers who at these sort of larger companies or even, out in the community who are working on things that may not be Bitcoin related, but they've got this hunger, this thirst for Bitcoin. They'll come in for, I think it was an 8-week program, about six hours every Saturday, to just focus on, they'd have speakers, people like Ryan X. Charles, people like Vitalik Buterin, just come in and talk about, highly technical subjects, not only highly technical, but in an introductory fashion, and guide them through the process of using different tools and different concepts and ideas. All culminating in something that was like, it's like a final demo day, right? Where everybody's been working on these projects and they're trying to build new applications using blockchain-based technology. So it's not specific to Bitcoin, but certainly brought more broadly blockchain technology and how they apply to various industries and verticals. And what struck me about this and why I think I really pushed BitPay to get involved is really seeing how many engineers at these large companies are interested and want to get involved, but don't necessarily have an avenue for doing so. I mean, even, in attendance, I got to teach one of the classes on a product called BitCore. And even in just like a little bit of time with these people, it's amazing. It really strikes me as like, wow, this is a broad thing. This is a huge movement that's taking place, and the best engineers in the world are actually getting involved, which is really cool.
That's really awesome, Eric, and actually hearing from Tony as well. I think Austin and San Francisco must be some of the most interesting places to live in the world. These are places where these new technologies are really being lived with and experimented with in unprecedented ways. Knowing Austin, I'm sure they're already moving on to Dogecoin or something weird like that. But I'm really interested in hearing a little bit more about the projects built in San Francisco at Blockchain University. Would you say that a lot of the projects you saw there were really significant uses of blockchain technology? Were there any kind of indications that people are really serious about building this into kind of really, really disruptive applications?
Definitely. One of the things that stood out to me was this smart contract platform for trading assets, and the one that they walked up on stage and gave an awesome demo of basically offering up a barrel of oil and then buying that barrel of oil and executing that contract completely on the blockchain without a clearinghouse or a real exchange. That was really powerful and compelling. Obviously, the immediate questions were from the audience were, A, we don't necessarily understand how this all works because this is all like options contracts, futures contracts, et cetera, et cetera. But B, like the legal question, right? The system that we have for futures and exchanges focuses the regulation on the centralized entity, the clearinghouse or the exchange or the organizational body that manages these things. But when you introduce something like this, like the blockchain, which is why this is such an interesting idea to me, you don't have those parties anymore, and everything is just simply enforced through math. There is no party that you can regulate because it's all completely decentralized. Which is like really, really cool. But you know, of course, the lawyers in the room, and there was a lot more than just engineers and designers in the room. It was people really interested in legal stuff. They threw up the red flags over this, but it's applications like that. There was another project that wasn't in the finals, but it was really interesting, which is they were taking this idea of a smart contract and tokenizing the basic constructs that a smart contract might expose so that it could be translated into human language or vice versa, so that human language could be immediately translated into a smart contract. So you get programmatic enforcement of human written contracts or a human human window into what a smart contract actually is doing behind the scenes with the actual code that's enforcing it, which was really exciting. And then probably the number three that was interesting to me, and it's certainly a lot less serious and utilitarian, but there was a bonus project, which was Super Satoshi Brothers. It basically was an automatic level generation by based on Bitcoin blocks, right? So like you would take a block and the transactions in that block would be used as a seed for generating a Super Mario Brothers world. And then you could play that Super Mario Brothers world and you just basically go through the entire Bitcoin blockchain transaction by transaction, which was awesome to me. I'll admit I wasted a couple hours playing that this week. So, I do think that these were serious projects. And there were some fun things in there too. And it's really showing that, you know, if you apply, you know, appropriate brain power, that and you sort of broaden your horizons, pretty much everything out there at this point is ripe for disruption. We've locked ourselves into this like large, you know, behemoth of a legal system where the regulations and the innovations and the power players have all become deeply entrenched and the innovation has slowed down. So this gets back to the innovation chasm that I've previously talked about. And I think that some of the more fresh-minded engineers and lawyers and people out there are starting to realize that if we introduce true disintermediation, true decentralization to these spaces, then it basically overturns everything and puts us leaps and bounds ahead of where we are today.
I think it's really encouraging to see all the efforts being put into education and like what you were doing with Blockchain University, Eric, to really encourage these people to build what they're building, whether it was video game or, like you said, decentralized applications for trading futures. But Tony, I know you really taught me a lot when I sort of started getting to the Bitcoin space. Do you have any interest in sort of engaging with education and this kind of aspect of communicating? So we're definitely doing it with the podcast, but I think there's something special about really mentoring and kind of instructing people on how to actually really use and take advantage of these technologies.
Absolutely, there is. There is definitely something where lately I'm actually in contact with some people at Princeton University, and what they're doing is not similar, but not different to what Blockchain University is. And they're building tons of projects. There's multiple people on staff at Princeton that are involved here, and they actually have an open class that I believe anyone can attend. I believe it's free. Don't quote me on that, but it got a lot of press recently. And you know, it's really showing that one of the largest Ivy League schools is really, really, really putting you know, the intellectual might behind Bitcoin. And it's interesting because one of the projects that they're involved with, one of the professors is involved with, is actually a different decentralized prediction market, and it's something that he actually wanted last year. And you know, it's something now that it's kind of we're putting our thing out. We're in discussions with them about that, and it's fascinating. It's great to seeing academia actually figure this out, because there's so many people that really learn so well in the classroom setting, and there's people that don't. And the people that do, you know, this is a great way to get Bitcoin introduced to them. And seeing things like, you know, in academia in general, like I this is like my humble brag, but my college actually wrote a piece about me in their alumni paper, in their alumni magazine, and 2 years ago, that would have never happened about Bitcoin. So you see little things like that happening and little changes happening. So it's fantastic.
Yeah. So I'll follow up with the Princeton thing. So about, I think it was summer of last year, I headed out to Cisco, and I got the chance to stop by the Electronic Frontier Foundation's offices, the EFF. And they had a fellow from Princeton University working with the Princeton team there, working on what's called threshold signatures in Bitcoin, avoiding too many technicals. It's basically a way of doing MySig without in a much more secure, private fashion. So it's really good to see them breaking into it. So 2 weeks ago, I was invited to speak at MIT for the MIT Bitcoin Expo. And as many of our listeners may know, the freshman class at MIT, you know, got a gift of $100 worth of Bitcoin. And MIT Bitcoin Club is really, really interested in, you know, the whole Bitcoin ecosystem. When I headed up there, it stunned me. I've been, you know, following, you know, various Bitcoin conferences for a long time, but it really stunned me to see just there's a whole class. We're teaching a class this past semester about Ethereum. There was probably 5 or 10 different academic papers that were released within that week that everybody was talking about by the academic community, not only at MIT, not only at Princeton, but at several other universities. Perhaps the more interesting of them was something called Zero Cash. It seems as if they've tackled all of the difficulties and they're ready to create the Genesis block for a true zero knowledge proof cryptocurrency, which is really exciting. So yeah, just seeing these academic institutions starting to get deeply involved with the crypto is another sign to me that people are starting to take this much, much more seriously. And I say much several times because it's so striking to me the difference of where we're at today with crypto and blockchain tech than where we were even 6 months ago or even 2 years ago. And that sort of gets me to, you know, something else that's happened just recently. In fact, today it was announced that one of these open markets it's accessible via Tor. Evolution has been scammed, hacked, and that the Bitcoins have been lost. So that's a negative thing, but it seems very similar to what we've had in the past. What do you guys hear about that?
Basically, I heard what you just said, and it does put a lot of things in question, because if the market itself is a scam, you know, then how do you have faith in any market like that? And this isn't the first time this has happened. I know that there's, you know, been reported instances of fake Silk Roads, fake just different you know, decentralized marketplaces, and it's not different. But it really does, you know, show that Bitcoin, even in its illicit uses, is something where you never know who's on the other end. And if the entire market is a scam, even the top-notch quality of security of Bitcoin isn't going to help you.
But the thing that pisses me off is, why were people using a service that didn't do multi-sig? Like, what did you expect to happen? You're going to give your money to some other institution. It's treating it exactly the same thing as a bank. If they have the ability to run away with your money, given enough time, they will.
Amen to that.
Multi-sig, Jesus.
Amen to that, but I also think, you know, multi-sig's still a little beyond the grasp of a lot of people that are probably using Silk Road, or I should say Evolution. I'm so used to saying Silk Road. And that's what I would think it is, but it's interesting because over the weekend, I used Copay a few times, and it's so simple to use, actually. I think it's just the idea. And to me, if you can understand Bitcoin, understanding multi-sig, you know, wallets and how that works is extremely simple, but you're right on that, and you're right on letting them hold your coins, or any service hold your coins. It's not the right thing to do.
Maybe it is beyond, you know, people's understanding to be able to, like, manage your own multi-sig. In the case of these, like, digital goods or these goods marketplaces, like, you know, Silk Road, like Evolution, like some of the others that are out there, you don't even have to manage the multi-sig. Instead of doing a single signature deposit address, all you have to do is, when the user enters a trade, you know, create a multi-sig for you, create a multi-sig address, and just say, hey, fund this trade. And then the exchange or the marketplace holds one key, you, the user, hold one key, And then the recipient on the other end holds one key, and the exchange doesn't even need to sign any transactions unless there's a dispute. So I don't know. I'm at a loss. I'm upset that more people got burned by this. There was a lot of people doing legitimate business that got burned by this. People doing things that, you know, totally should have been free that they got burned by this, and it just upsets me. And I hope that this is another reason to drive better security by these open exchanges as more and more start cropping up.
I think that's a good point, Eric. And what I'm really noticing is that in all of these cases, the innovation in Bitcoin is still happening at the edges, whether it's the sort of the dark markets or among the younger crowd in colleges. Another thing we're really seeing is, especially in this week in recent news, is Bitcoin adoption and experimentation in foreign countries and sort of around the world. Last week, T-Mobile Poland started accepting Bitcoin for cell phone minute top-ups. And they're actually offering 20% off or 20% additional credits for people who use Bitcoin to shop with them. And I'm really interested in this and wondering whether this is a strategy for some of the larger businesses and corporations to really dip their feet into Bitcoin. Is to sort of try it out by nation, maybe sort of in places where it wouldn't be quite as noticeable, but where they'll have a place to experiment. And this is one of kind of the encouraging things about Bitcoin to me is that it is... one thing remains the same among all this change is that the innovation experimentation continues, and it will continue in unexpected places. So have you heard the news of this, and what do you think it means for consumer adoption?
Go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
Well, all I want to say is that I heard the news, and I immediately went to T-Mobile. Like, I didn't realize it was only Poland. I jumped right onto T-Mobile's website, and I wanted to sign up and pay for I was going to switch from my current mobile carrier to T-Mobile. And then I found out, oh, it's not available in the U.S., and I became very bad and disenfranchised.
Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me that T-Mobile is the telecom that did this. They have, you know, they have a history of being a little different, and actually, you know, probably the most consumer friendly of all the cellular services that are out there. Down to, you know, when they were actually paying people's cancellation fees if they switched over to T-Mobile, and I'm actually sad I never used their service, but I do know that their domestic network quality isn't as good as other options, and I'm not someone who travels a lot, so for me that was the killer feature, but. It's awesome. And, you know, it's been a good week for merchants accepting Bitcoin with Rakuten and, you know, and others that are actually being announced soon and coming up. And it's interesting because there's going to be, it really needs that consumer incentive. And I hope the T-Mobile model is right. And it really is something where, and if it isn't, you know, and even if it is, you can't force consumers have merchants to have a discount. So what other possible consumer incentives can there be to use Bitcoin other than, you know, owning your money? Because honestly, that's the biggest nut to crack. And whoever can crack that nut the first really solves a problem.
Yeah, what do you think, Eric? Do you think we need a cultural change in order to see people really adopt Bitcoin at the consumer level? Do they really have to understand the political significance or the philosophical significance? Or are there things sort of like this 20% back deal, which you think will be more useful in that? I hate to pitch those two against each other. I think they're both important, but I'm wondering what you think will be how it actually turns out in the end.
Yeah. So the thing about Bitcoin and consumers, I don't think that they need to understand why Bitcoin is so powerful. I think that will come with time, right? Like as you know, society sort of becomes more and more educated, you know, like, you know, kids are taught algebra in middle school and in many cases elementary school now. And algebra is like a, you know, not new, but all of the tech that we've got, it took a long time for it to become common knowledge. I think the same thing will be true for cryptography and, you know, finance and economics. But that's not an acute focus, right? I think that consumer adoption for Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency is based entirely on the user experience. Bitcoin will not see any consumer adoption until it is a 10 times improvement over the experience of paying with a credit card or cash. It will not be used as a consumer payment system until it is 10 times easier than a credit card. Now, that's a bold statement because, you know, paying with a credit card is pretty easy, but I do think that there is a lot of room for improvement. So, for example, you know, to pay with a credit card, in almost all cases, right, I have to, you know, get my good. Maybe I'm buying a cup of coffee. I have to reach into my pocket, pull out my wallet, pull out my credit card, and most cases I have to hand it over to the person who's the person behind the counter, which means A, I have to trust them, and then B, they hand it back to me. I have to put it back in my wallet, put it back in my pocket, and then I have to sign something, right? Or even pull out my ID if they're actually following the guidelines. So yeah, there's a lot of steps there, and a lot of companies are making it easier, making the swipe process happen in front of you, using chips and pins. There's even some transference over to mobile apps, but we're not seeing that big boost yet. Consumer adoption, I think, is actually, you know, secondary to the sort of business-to-business case. You know, international transfers, international settlements. But the consumer fate part will not take place until there's a 10x improvement in the user experience. I don't think that businesses are not going to be incentivized to pass on the savings that they get by using Bitcoin, which is going to be marginal, 2 to 3% saved in credit card fees or, you know, bank robberies when you – or, you know, holdups when you're moving actual cash to a bank, right? I just don't see consumer adoption happening until someone comes out with the kick-ass killer experience that I walk in the store, I order my cup of coffee, and I walk out. There is no payment. You got to remove payments entirely if it's going to be adopted on the consumer side. And even then, maybe we don't call it Bitcoin. Maybe it's just Bitcoin rails and – U.S. dollar pricing on top of it or fiat pricing on top of it. But again, 10x improvement has to exist before consumer stuff does.
There's something there even beyond, though, the user experience. And it really does have to do with the question that when ardent Bitcoin critics come to me, they always say one thing, which is really, why would I use this? Why, how is this easier for me? And honestly, my response is, well, right now it's not. And I hope it will be someday, and I think it will be someday, but right now it's not. And it really is the best response usually people give me as a criticism. So with that being said, I do agree with your point in general about the UX. What were you going to say there, James?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges, and we talked with Paul Pooley a couple of weeks ago about this, is balancing decentralization with that user experience, because oftentimes they're at loggerheads, and sometimes for good reason. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But really, consumer adoption may be the lagging indicator of Bitcoin success. One group of people in particular we're seeing really embracing Bitcoin are VCs, venture capitalists. And another one of the big news items, one of the more mysterious things of which Bitcoin has no shortage, was the $116 million funding of this startup 21 in Silicon Valley. No one really knows what it does yet. We know it's Bitcoin related, but I'm wondering, not to encourage speculation, but what do y'all think about this? What do you think they're doing? What do you think they're building? Because they certainly have a strong team behind them.
So I've spent a little bit of time. I mean, one used to be a 21E6. They've been around for 2-some-odd years now. I remember seeing them on the Bitcoin Talk forums a while ago when they sort of raised their initial first round. But it stunned me to hear that they were still around. And as I understand it, even back then, they were doing mining hardware. Like, I think that this is a big ASIC play. My speculation is that it's on the consumer device side. There's not much space in mining to be had right now. There's not much further, not much smaller that the ASICs can get before we start being electrons. There's a couple other interesting technologies on the radar, but I think those technologies will take, you know, an Intel to get involved, right? Hardware is a totally different game than the software investment marketplace, and $116 million is about the low end for what you would expect, you know, a chip manufacturer to be. So I'm wondering if I don't know that they're going to be able to compete with an Intel or a, you know, an AMD if they decided to come play ball in the Bitcoin or crypto space. But hey, maybe they are. My anticipation is that this is going to be an embedded mesh network / mining device pay for itself type of thing. And that's just based on what I've gleaned the past couple of years and some conversations that I've, you know, had over the past year or so. I'm still uncertain. I don't think that mining is a good place to be getting into right now, especially as an investor. So they must have provided something. Either A, they provided something very interesting and very forward thinking, like way forward thinking, or they just happened to be yet another mining company that finagled in investors. And mind you, I think that their investment list is actually some intelligent people, very intelligent investors. My worry is that this is just yet another mining company that finagled money to start another mining company out of investors that may or may not be educated about the space. And I'm worried about that.
According to my secret crypto psychic spy, from what I hear, actually, this is Qualcomm's introduction into the Internet of Things is what I'm hearing. Again, this is all speculation. Nothing here I'm reporting is fact. But I will say, you know, it very well soon could be revealed as fact. And that's what I'm hearing. It's about, I don't know what level. I do know that the investment is huge. And I do know it involves hardware, which I actually think is where the investment needs to go. And not just in mining, in, you know, things like Trezor and things similar to that, just different technologies built around, you know, blockchain apps, just to decentralized apps to make them, you know, easier to run for anyone and a consumer device. So I'm very fascinated by this whole thing, just because it's really hard to get information about what they're doing, and they've been doing it for a while. And you know, I do want to get your opinion of this too, James, because this is something where when we had a meeting and we were talking about it, the meeting, we brought this up, and all of us were kind of like, you know, I don't really know what they're doing, and we really didn't know much. And that's it's interesting to see a company fly so far under the radar, and then, you know, then get all kinds of hype at once, and people are still kind of lost in what they're doing. And I don't necessarily say that my secret psychic spy is something that will be truthful, but so far he has no reason to lie to me. But what are you thinking it is, James?
Oh, we all know I'm your secret psychic spy.
yes.
What I really think about this, for one thing, I think they have a great team. Balaji Srinivasan, I believe I'm saying his name correctly. He's a VC partner at Andreessen Horowitz. He's also like a chief philosopher of decentralization on Twitter. If you don't follow him, definitely do that. But he's a co-founder of this project. I think the fact that they've been able to maintain secrecy for so long is a really good sign that they have probably a fanatical company culture, something to keep people really, really very interested in keeping this under wraps and keeping this going for 3 years. And I think there's a lot of hope for this being something significant for hardware, because I don't think with this kind of attention, this kind of funding, they're just going in the traditional route. So far in Bitcoin mining, we've seen a sort of an inverse Moore's law, in that difficulties increase. It's become less and less possible to do it with, you know, smaller equipment. The incentive is there to actually see a change in that and see competition against that sort of inverse Moore's law to get to a point where hardware is more efficient. So it'll be interesting to see what these guys do. But yeah, it's just absolutely one of those things that raises curiosity, and that's always fun. So I'll hold comment until the future.
Right on. That's a smart way to go about it. And I did want to follow up with to all of our conversation today, just to basically mention that everyone involved in this podcast actually was also involved in a project when we were all at BitPay together. And it was the Bitcoin Checkout app, which was nominated for the retail category for the Contactless and Mobile Awards. And that's something I wanted to just chat about real quick, as I believe everyone here had some role in the development and launch of that. And during my time at BitPay, it was one of the most fun things that I took part in working on. And I think the developers did an amazing job. And first and foremost, I want to say that the ding at the end was created by our producer, Chaz Ferguson. And if this world is fair, that will become the new cha-ching as the audio indicator of a Bitcoin transaction. I absolutely thought it was genius. It stands out. We put it in our commercials for the Bitcoin Bowl. That's how much we love that, or I love that noise, and I think the company did. And I wanted to say, you know, even though I'm not a part of the company anymore, I think that it was awesome, and congratulations to everyone here that worked on it. You guys all really busted your ass to make that thing work, and I was very, very, very thrilled to work on that and happy that I was a part of something that worked out so awesome. So congratulations to every other person on this call, because, you know, that's something where we, you know, we did something really cool there. So it was one of my favorite things I did in my time in crypto. So good job, guys.
Today, we're joined by Jason King, the founder of Sean's Outpost. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me here. Happy to be here.
So why don't you, for the people who haven't actually heard of Sean's Outpost up until date, I know you guys have been around for 2 years. It's your anniversary today. Why don't you sort of share a little bit about what you guys do and what got you inspired to get into this space?
Sure. So Sean's Outpost is a homeless outreach. We're based primarily in Pensacola, Florida. Today is our 2 year anniversary since Sean's Outpost.
That's fantastic, Jason. That's quite an amazing number. 150,000 meals served. And all of this funding to date has been done exclusively through Bitcoin. Is that correct?
Primarily through Bitcoin. I mean, we've gotten some Litecoin and Dogecoin donations as well, and you know, a couple of different alts. And some Good Samaritans have, you know, sent us some USD. We're definitely not snobs. Like, if you come up and want to give us $20 to help feed people, we're not going to be like, get your dirty fiat away. But yeah, definitely primarily through Bitcoin.
So Jason, how did Sean's Outpost first adopt Bitcoin and approach Bitcoin? Was it something you discovered yourself through kind of exploring the technology, or was it brought to you by someone you know?
So I've been in Bitcoin since mid to late 2010, and I've always been sort of a lurker on the forums and r/Bitcoin. But I got into helping homeless people in February 2013, and then in March of 2013. You know, Bitcoin broke 50, which was just, I don't know if you guys can remember back to that, it was just a crazy time, and there was all this speculation as to whether it was real value or not, because how can this thing that only exists in, you know, in the digital realm actually have real value? And sort of flippantly, I said that, well, hey, if you send me a Bitcoin, I'll go feed, and it's kind of a watch, you know, watch what you say sort of thing, because that resonated, and, you know, we figured we got, I think we fed 500 meals the first week, and we just figured that we would just keep feeding meals until people stopped donating, and then we would figure something else out to do in terms of, you know, getting donations or whatnot. And here we are, you know, 150,000 meals later, and we're still working.
It really is amazing to hear that you've been around for 2 years. You know, you and I have chatted a little bit about, you know, how long that really is in the Bitcoin ecosystem. I mean, I remember, you know, when I first came into Bitcoin, a lot of the companies that were around, you know, back then aren't there today, right? So talk to us a little bit about your journey and, you know, what is it that you think has, you know, helped Sean's Outpost survive versus some of the other things that have entered this ecosystem?
Yeah, it's, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show. It is, companies do seem to fall by the wayside here. We have a quick churn in the Bitcoin ecosystem. I don't know. I think that, you know, myself and my partner, Mike Kimbrell, we're just really focused on wanting to help the homeless. And I think that with or without Bitcoin, this is what I would be doing with my life. And I think my partner feels the same way too. And so, I think that, you know, Paul Graham has a great essay about when you're trying to figure out what you want to do as a startup, to do the thing that you can't imagine not doing, and that's definitely what we do here. So, you know, we just try to keep focused on what we're doing, and you know, it's difficult running a nonprofit, but on the same token, you know, we don't have to handle a lot of the same issues that a for-profit corporation does. Like, we can be focused on just our core, to knock us off the throne and feed more homeless people than us. But unfortunately, it's really kind of just us out here.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that, you know, nonprofits can be focused on, and there's quite a few in the Bitcoin space. Bitcoin like applies to nonprofits in a very interesting way, and we'll get to that in a bit. But what about homelessness really spoke to you, and why did you pick homelessness as to be the thing that you went after?
So I'm originally from Pensacola. This is my hometown, but I moved away 15 years, and I was in the Army for a while, and then I ran a couple of companies, and I moved back here into 2012. And was just sort of overwhelmed by how bad the homeless situation had gotten here. It was very prevalent everywhere. And in that same time period, my best friend, who's also from Pensacola, Sean Dugas, was murdered, and it was really a rough period. And so we're just kind of trying to figure something that we could do to keep his memory alive. And so we founded Sean's Outpost as a way just to do something good in the name of somebody who was really important to me and who was really taken from this world too soon.
You know, that's an incredible story. And I think that the memory of, you know, Sean has sort of played out throughout the success of Sean's Outpost. And I think you touched it's 150,000 people now that have been fed, which is quite a monumental number. I talked a little bit earlier about how Bitcoin sort of applies to these, you know, these nonprofits and charities in an interesting way. What do you think is the outlook for, you know, transparency in the nonprofit space with regards to Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies? Does it have a role to play? Is it instrumental? Or is it just sort of a gimmicky or a nice idea? What do you think?
So I think to date, even with Sean's Outpost, I think that Bitcoin's really just been a fundraising tool, and it's, you know, it's marvelous that it has a lot of benefits over other things, but I think that Bitcoin really does have this ability to kind of transform the whole sector, to sort of utilize the blockchain and utilize this transparency that you like that you talk about to run nonprofits in a way that's never really been possible before. Because, you know, I think that nonprofits really exist sort of in a superposition, which is that most people think that charity is important and that it's needed, but they also sort of think that most charities are inept or inefficient and are wasting their money. So if you can, you know, sort of produce this holy grail of showing people the money that you get and exactly where it's going, and then also be able to sort of tangibly tie that to an output, so it's like you don't just see this is money and we spent money, but you say this is the money and this is how much effect we were able to cause. This is how much, you know, how much progress we were able to make towards our mission statement with that money. And I think that Bitcoin and blockchain technology really is going to enable that in ways that, you know, we can't even really quantify right now. But I am actually really excited for Bitcoin in the nonprofit space.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really interesting. You know, you start taking this idea that, you know, the Bitcoin is sort of a transparent ledger and you can actually audit everything. And if it applies to nonprofits and, you know, allows people to be sure of, you know, hey, I donated this Bitcoin over here and I can see that it fed these homeless people over here. That's a really cool model, right? You can start. Do you think that there's a place for that in, you know, governance structures or additional things on top of that outside of the charity space?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think transparency is the watchword of the day. I think that, you know, we have been used to finance as a whole being sort of this opaque thing where we had to trust gatekeepers, we had to trust accountants, we had to trust bookkeepers, we had to trust these people that had the ability to abuse that system. And I think that in the future that, you know, most companies are going... I think it's going to be expected of people that like that there, you know, some level of finance is going to be available on the blockchain. It's going to be openly auditable and they're going to have to be accountable for what they're doing. You know, if you think about things, you know, like Wall Street banks and like all of the bonuses that are going to, you know, Wall Street brokers and things like that, things that like people are really pissed off about, you know, being able to see that openly, I think it's probably going to actually fundamentally change how most businesses operate.
Now, Jason, you're really working kind of a new model here with Bitcoin for Charity, and you're really one of the earliest founders. Have you also seen a number of groups that you really admire in this space or that you've actually given advice to that you think are kind of doing good work as far as this goes with using Bitcoin to kind of increase transparency or else develop entirely new models?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of charities that are taking Bitcoin now that were traditional charities that are taking Bitcoin. But in terms of, like, Bitcoin-based charities, it's actually very, very few. You know, it's like we're Sean's Outpost, and then there's like Free Aid, Bitcoin Not Bombs, and BitGive, College Cryptocurrency Network. And I think there's a couple others that I'm missing, but I mean, it's like it's kind of a handful of us, and it really is like we're sort of just pioneering here. I really like BitGive's model. You know, I really believe in the power of Bitcoin and that it's going to grow in value. And I think the idea of sort of getting a pool of Bitcoin together now, so that in the future, when it's worth a lot more money, that, you know, you can exponentially sort of increase the power that that money, that Bitcoin can do towards good. I think that's a really good idea. I think Connie Galippi is a really smart woman, and I really like the work that they do. And I think Davi Barker from Bitcoin Not Bombs is probably the most underutilized, underappreciated resource in the whole Bitcoin ecosystem. He's an amazing marketer. He's a fantastic artist. And he's really able to sort of leverage those two things into bringing awareness about Go and Bitcoin.
Yeah, Davi strikes me as a man of many talents. I had a pleasure of meeting him actually back at Coins in the Kingdom.
Davi's amazing. Sean's out.
Yeah, he really is. And I'm wondering, because I know he's definitely been influential in starting Bitcoin Not Bombs, a number of other things. We'd definitely love to talk to him at some point. But I'm wondering what other decentralized technologies you see out there, because we're about more than Bitcoin for sure, and I'm sure you're as well. What other technologies you see out there which you think might be helpful for charities, especially in the decentralization space?
I think we're pretty focused on Bitcoin. I think, you know, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on that I don't really understand a whole lot, because we haven't seen practical applications of it yet. I mean, you know, Ethereum's a very interesting concept. Counterparty's really been making some moves, but like currently no one's got that killer app yet. You know, Bitcoin as a currency, as a value, works well. So we're able to sort of maneuver within that. But I hear the promise of all this really cool stuff, and I know it's just around, I haven't seen it, and we've really been focused on Bitcoin. You know, some stuff that we're working with, we're currently in development for an app called Outpost Everywhere, and it's basically a way to decentralize just food sharing as a whole. We call it jokingly Uber for soup kitchens, and it would be basically two buttons. Like, one would say give a meal, one would say get a meal, and so if you were hungry, you could push get a meal, and it would show you the locations of all the homeless outreaches in your area that had food available, but it would also show you the locations of people that had pressed give a meal, so that when you have extra food, or you just decide, hey, it'll be cool to feed some homeless people tonight, you can just say, hey, I've got 10 meals available, you know, I'm at 10th and Mission, you know, come to 10th and Mission, I've got food. And I think that, you know, that's really cool. It's not really blockchain based, but what could be really cool is like bounties for feeding homeless people. Like, say you're driving down the street, see a homeless person on the side of the road, you'd like to feed him, but you can't right now, but you can geotag where that person is and say, hey, I will give $5 in Bitcoin to the first person that feeds that guy. And then, you know, someone can go feed him and provide social proof of, that they fed that person. And, you know, and we can work that out. And the cool thing about, like, Bitcoin is we could do, like, a multi-sig escrow. So you could say, like, I'm putting $5 in a multi-sig escrow right now. And then when you go to claim it, you know, you get part of a key. And the person who submitted the bounty has part of a key. And then, you know, sort of a trusted third party, like, you know, the Outpost Everywhere platform or, you know, other reputation-based third parties can have part of the key. And, you know, two of three people have to agree that you've met the threshold for retrieving that bounty. And then, you know, then everybody wins. Like, you feel good because you got that guy fed. That guy got fed. Somebody got paid $5 for the bounty. Multi-sig ones for everything. I think that's the kind of stuff that's kind of simple, but also really powerful.
What's sort of the timeline for developing something like that and really seeing it launch out into the world? Outpost Everywhere or any of the next big projects for Sean's Outposts?
Outpost Everywhere, we're perpetually 2 weeks, you know, we're going to see it in 2 weeks, like Butterfly Labs, it'll be 2 weeks, 2 weeks trademarked. It's one of the problems with being nonprofit is there's no profit, right? There's no profit. So, you know, we're working on a shoestring. So we've got some really great developers that are working on it. Bryce Case, otherwise known as Whitey Cracker, is actually our lead product dev. Will Hawk from Push for Pizza is working with us. Stephen Dack from CryptoKit, or formerly from CryptoKit, are all working on it. But like, when you're working on no budget, you're kind of working at the mercy of people's time schedule and stuff. So, you know, if anyone out there,
Jason. All right, guys, it seems as if we've lost Jason. So you can find Jason King and Sean's Outpost and all of the work that he's doing on Twitter at Sean's Outpost. That's Sean, S-E-A-N-S, Sean's Outpost, and also Sean's Outpost on Facebook. Please remember to donate. You can send your Bitcoins directly over the wire and help all the wonderful homeless outreach that Jason is doing down there.
So until next week, decentralized listeners, we will see you and keep on building.
The show is produced and edited by Chaz Ferguson. Our featured music was written and performed by Tony Liggs. Find out more about the show and listen to past episodes at decentralized.fm. You can also join us on Twitter at @decentralizeall and on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/decentralized-podcasts.